Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is Jamie Cullum. A prodigious talent. When you watch him sing and play piano, it's as though music, not blood, is pumping through his veins. He's worked with everyone from Paul McCartney to Amy Winehouse and even Clint Eastwood. He is a master of live performance. And one can imagine that those early days of hoofing between pizza bars and jazz clubs have been perfect training for the demands of fatherhood. He is married to the model and writer Sophie Dahl, and their daughter Lyra is just a year old. So, how did someone who failed their grade 4 piano end up with a bunch of hits and a stack of awards? Hopefully we'll find out. He says, "Nothing I have done feels like it was easy." Well, that's very interesting to me, Jamie Cullum, because you do look, when you're performing, as though you find it incredibly easy. There's a lot of craft going on there.
I always find words like prodigious very frightening, because I certainly never felt prodigious when I was young. I didn't feel bad about what I was doing, but I felt like I was just kind of knocking around and having a good time. And certainly no one at that stage plucked me out and said, "You're going to do this when you're older." It was nothing like that, really. It was just always something I enjoyed so much. It's come from pure play and enjoyment, really.
Can you explain to us what it is you get out? I mean, it's clear what we get out of your live performance. It's thrilling to watch, but what do you get out of live performance?
It's where you feel that the time you've spent behind the piano and the time you spent working on your voice and your songs and your interpretations, where all that kind of goes away. You can throw it in the bin and it's happening. I guess the word automatically is wrong, but it definitely happens with no thought. That for me is when it feels kind of very beautiful.
I like that you said just a moment ago there, "when I was young." You have now reached the grand old age of 32.
Yeah.
When you sing, when I listen to your voice, I think, well, it sounds like the voice of somebody who's on a sort of quart of bourbon a day and at least 40 fags.
Well, that's true.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, no, but it's funny. Most people still think I'm about 12 years old, so that's funny. But I always looked really young. I remember when I first went to school, about 4 days in, there was an announcement at assembly that said something like, "The girls in the later classes must not pick up Jamie Cullum and carry him around." I remember being in
There's four girls up at the back with their hands up wanting to do that later, I should say.
I remember at break time just being kind of plucked and picked up. I quite liked it, to be honest.
Michael Parkinson, of course, was one of your early champions, both on his radio and television shows. And I noticed there was a fabulous publicity shot of you, and I think it was probably the last chat show that he did on ITV, and you were standing alongside, I wrote it down here, Michael Caine, David Attenborough, Edna Everidge, Judy Dench and David Beckham. Was there any sense in which you felt overwhelmed that night, I'm wondering?
I felt like I'd been photoshopped in to that. I'm so bad at being cool in those situations. Everyone's always looking kind of smart and kind of chilled out, and I'm in the middle going, I'm holding my thumbs aloft and doing a ridiculous smile. But I always feel like that inside. It always feels slightly unbelievable because it's born out of something that was just something I love to do.
We're very fortunate because you're going to not just share with us your 8 Desert Island Discs today, but you're also going to play some of your Desert Island Discs. Can you tell me a little bit about your first choice?
This song I'm going to play is very significant because it was the first proper kind of jazz tune that I learnt how to play. I just learnt from listening to the recording of it, and I literally painstakingly worked out every note in every chord over this whole piece of music. And it was the first one I ever played kind of properly live at a gig. I was at a pub near here. There's a pub in Cologne called the Fox and Hounds. And I used to go there with a friend of mine to just watch the music. And one night the piano player was very miserable and he ended up kind of sloping off stage. And the guy who was leading the band, he said, "Is there anyone out there who can play?" And I shrunk into my seat and my friend pushed my hand up and they dragged me up and I played the song I'm about to play now.
Mm. Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans and miss her each night and day? I know I'm not wrong, 'cause the feeling's getting stronger longer I stay away.
Fabulous. My Castaway, Jamie Callum, and You Know What It Means to Miss New Orleans. And now you have to sit here and be all normal. Because once you've done... Do you not feel like doing a backflip or something after you've done something like that?
It's done all right for JLS, hasn't it? So.
You were saying just as the introduction to that, that you know you sort of studied every corner of every note to work out how to piece that together. Is it indeed the case that you don't really read music in the strict sense of the word?
No, I mean, I don't really read a note of music. And when I started doing piano lessons, because music was so important in our house, but what became very quickly apparent was that I just couldn't get to grips with the notes on a page. And the teacher would say, okay, we're going to read this piece of music. And I would say to her, I remember vividly, well, can you play it to me first? So I'd make her play it for me, and then I'd start playing it, and then I'd add bits that I thought sounded better. And she said, you can't do that to Bach. You just can't, you know. maybe to Handel, but... so she... the reason why I didn't really get further than grade four was because at that stage, you know, the sight reading part was so important. Like, it was almost like I was dyslexic. So I really gave up after that point trying to read.
So do you find clearly it hasn't inhibited your musical creativity. Is there any time when you sort of think, you know, I really wish I could, that it would be better?
Oh, every day. Yeah, I'd love to. I'm actually, funny enough, gone back to studying that now to try and learn to read music properly, because, you know, I would like to compose scores and, you know, do all sorts of things. That's something that I'm gonna get to.
I've been reading for the last sort of almost year or so that Jamie Callum is bringing out an album. Now, I'm wondering if the pram in the hall is getting in the way of the album, because as I mentioned in the introduction, Lara's now a year old, and of course I'm sure you're pretty involved in her little life as it emerges. So is that getting in the way of the new album?
No, I mean, it's not actually. I definitely took some time off before she was born and after she was born to just kind of be around and enjoy that amazing first period, and then I started drifting back to the studio, and at that point, I think you really enjoy the creativity part of it even more.
Does she like Daddy's music? Does she listen?
She likes music. She loves the drums. I have a drum kit at home, and I definitely sit her down on my knee and get her to hold the sticks and play. She thinks it's hilarious. I mean, my little studio at home is one big playhouse for her. It's amazing. And I think the more music education kind of focuses on the pleasure aspect of it, I think the more people will stick with it.
It's a very cruel and unpleasurable thing to ask a musician to choose just eight pieces of music. How tortuous has it been for you?
Oh, it was agony. Yeah, it was like being beaten by you, you know.
Some people would pay good money for that, Jamie, but they'll cut that out.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah.
Do tell me about your next piece of music.
It couldn't be more inappropriate after that. Yeah. This is a piece of music I completely love. My parents are both very musical. My whole family are musical. But my mum always used to sing in church. She used to sing the psalm every week. Amazing. I remember her kind of rehearsing it on the way to church. I was in the back kind of feeling angry about going to church and reading my Judge Dredd magazines. And she was practicing the psalm. And I just remember hearing this music. So this beautiful piece, it's called The Lamb by John Taverner.
Thank you.
That was The Lamb by John Taverner, performed by The 16, led by Harry Christophers. So, Jamie Cullum, you were born in 1979. You grew up in Wiltshire. What are your earliest memories of life at home with the family?
I guess it was definitely a house where the radio was kind of always on. Something was playing. Sound of the 60s on a Saturday morning. A piano being in the house. A guitar being in the house. It being played by my brother. My uncle coming over playing guitar. My dad playing guitar. My mum singing. There's definitely music and lots of food. Always food all the time.
Tell me then about your parents' background. Your father, first of all, is it right he'd moved to this country? He wasn't born in Britain, is that right?
He was born in Jerusalem. His mother was from Prussia. She was Jewish and she fled the country in good time and made it to Jerusalem. And she met my grandfather there, who was English. He was born there and then they moved back.
And did you meet your grandmother?
My German grandmother, we called her Omi, yes. She was very important in my life. She was probably the most intelligent person I've still ever known. She was a member of Mensa, and she would always want to talk about books she was reading. She was a member of, like, book reading groups, and anything I was reading for A-level English, she'd already read and digested, you know, 10 times over. She could have done my essays for me.
She didn't ever, did she?
No.
Now's the time... Now's the time to confess.
I love radio.
He just mouthed she did for people listening at home. And what about your mother's background?
Well, it's equally as interesting. My mum was born in Burma. Her father was Indian and her mother was Burmese. And during that very confusing war, which no one seems to fully understand the history about, when Japan invaded Burma, they came over to the UK on a boat with one trunk full of things and ended up in Wales.
So what about, did that background, I mean, that is particularly exotic by anybody's estimation. Did all of that matter to you when you were growing up? Did you think, well, this heritage does sort of make my story different, or was it just, that was just the family?
Well, tragically, it matters more to me now that they're all gone. You know, obviously, when I was growing up, my granddad and my nan and granddad, they just were, you know, they were fun and they were brilliant and they were really important in my life, and Omi was too. That's always the problem, isn't it? You get far more interested in it the older you get. And then, yes, sadly, they're passed away. But they were brilliant.
Time for some more music, Jamie Cullum. Your third disc of the day. What are we going to hear?
Well, this is a massively important track to me. And it's great that we're in Bristol because this is great Bristol music. When I finished doing my A-levels, I decided to take a year out to kind of decide exactly what I wanted to do. I was doing music, but I thought doing music for a living was what other people did. I just thought it was something I would do for fun. It was around the time this music called drum and bass was coming out, and it just kind of connected the dots between what my peers were into, which was a lot of kind of beat-driven electronic music, but also it had this jazz melodic element to it. It's called Brown Paper Bag by Ronnie Size.
That was Ronnie Size and Represent and Brown Paper Bag. You can all sit down now. Whole place was up to that one. I'm wondering if your older brother, Ben, was a big influence. So often when I speak to castaways, they'll say, you know what, I started listening to music and it was really my big brother or my big sister's music that I started listening to. Was he an influence on you musically as you were growing up?
He was, I mean, still to this day, he's my most important musical influence. I mean, he, obviously being an older brother, he did everything first. He was the one kind of playing the guitar, being in all the bands and everyone was always asking me, oh, are you Ben Cullum's brother? And I'm like, yeah, I am. And I was like, I want to play the guitar too, you know. So we've always, collaborated, and I mean, he's the most generous person I know.
Does it make it easier bearing the fame thing when you've got sort of somebody in your corner, sort of professionally, and somebody you're able to talk through things with who's been there since literally the beginning?
Absolutely. I think the only way you can deal with any kind of fame is by having a solid rock of a background, because it's all so unreal and you need to come back to things that you just know are 100% real without a shadow of a doubt.
You did go to university, but you turned down a place at Oxford. Why did you do that?
It didn't feel right, and it felt like other people's ideas of what I should be doing. I just remember feeling like it was someone else's path and not mine. I knew I needed to go and work out this music thing.
And here are your parents who, I mean, we've heard a little of their fascinating story. So they are first-generation immigrants, and certainly, you know, there's been hardship in the past there. Here's their son being offered, you know, the sort of ultimate accolade of the establishment. And you say, Mum and Dad, I'm not going. What did they say?
They were cool about it, which is amazing. You know, they really were. And I think that's one of the greatest gifts I was given by them. They allowed me to make choices that felt like they were from my heart, and that I hope I give my own child that amazing gift. That's about as good as it gets, really.
It's time for your fourth choice of the day, and you're going to perform this, Jamie. Tell us a little bit about the song and why you've chosen it.
Well, one of the great things about doing what I do is I get to meet my heroes. Well, I've got to meet Elton John a few times now, and he's obviously one of my heroes, although I didn't know he was, because I was obsessed with a guy when I was at school called Ben Folds, and I went to see him in concert. I came back, and I was in the kitchen singing a song called Tiny Dancer, which Ben Folds had performed. And my mum said, are you singing an Elton John song? And I went, no, it's Ben Folds. And she got out a copy of the album it was on, and I then listened to every Elton John album I could find and got to meet him and actually played this song in front of him as well, which, again, foolish. But I now have this amazing picture of me sitting next to him, although it looks a bit like I'm sitting on his lap, weirdly. It really does. I'm not. I'd love to have done. But he was so kind, and he's so encouraging to me. So I'm going to play Elton John's Tiny Dancer.
Hold me closer, Tiny Dancer. Lights on the highway. Lay me down in sheets of linen. You had a busy day today.
You made a pretty good job of it. That was, of course, my castaway, Jamie Cullum, performing Tiny Dancer, written by Elton John and Bernie Taupin. I mentioned, Jamie, in the introduction that one of the people you'd worked with was Clint Eastwood. He asked you to get involved in writing the music for Gran Torino. How did that work? Did you collaborate with him? He actually sent you some music to begin with as the sort of seedling for what he wanted you to do.
Yeah, it was very much a collaboration. I had been lucky enough to meet Clint Eastwood through his son, Kyle Eastwood, who's a bass player. So when it came to Gran Torino, he knew he wanted a song and a theme in this movie. And while he was filming it, he said he could hear what the melody was going to be of the score while he was literally looking through the lens of the camera. I think, you know, it's probably the greatest professional experience of my life, really.
And you were nominated for a Golden Globe for that, am I right?
Yes, that was amazing. I got to go. I got a suit. You realise the pecking order of celebrity when you go to something like the Golden Globes. I arrived and the lady from Warner Brothers Films met me, and so she started taking me down a mile-long line of press, and they were pushing me through quite fast because Brad and Angelina had just arrived, so they wanted to get Cullum out the way, you know?
Bad timing.
Yeah, so they were kind of... She was walking down the line going, OK, I've got Jamie Cullum here, any takers? And... I'm literally walking down the line, and they're going, no, thank you. Brad, no. And finally, I see Fern Cotton, who no one is speaking to. So I run over to her, and we do like a half-hour in-depth interview. And then I go into the Golden Globes, lose to Bruce Springsteen, and get completely drunk. And had a brilliant time.
I think you deserved it. Is it true the first time you appeared on Parky's show you were wearing a suit from Oxfam?
Yes, I was, but it was altered. But it was a good suit, you know?
I guess people dress you now. You look very smart.
Oh, goodness me. Yeah, I mean, I dressed myself so I put my own...
No, I don't mean you have somebody... I think you're being deliberately mischievous. I mean, you know, are Dolce & Gabbana not saying, Jamie, please, take these 12 handmade suits?
Strangely, no. Do you know what? I have not really delved into that whole world. I think early on, things like that started to happen, but it all felt a bit kind of unnatural. Stuff like that makes me a bit nervous.
What was the point at which you thought my future lies in music? You know, you got a first-class degree from Reading University, so, you know, academically things went very well for you. You said earlier, other people did that. When was the point at which you thought, you know, just maybe I can make a living at this?
It was the last year at university, and I joined loads of function bands, really. You know, I played on weekends. I'd sometimes play 4 or 5 weddings or, you know, bars and pubs. People were coming back to see me, and I also realised that there weren't really many other people doing what I was doing. So I actually made a CD when I was at university with some of my student loan. I think I made 300 copies of it. And I just remember I was at a gig, my mum and dad came to see me, I played somewhere in Cheltenham, and there just came this moment where we literally couldn't open the CDs fast enough. People were buying them, and I think I decided in my last year of uni that I was going to move to London and just give it a few years.
Let's hear another one of your choices then, Jamie Cullum. What are we going to hear now?
I discovered most of my early jazz interest through hip-hop music. This tune is by a British band called the Cinematic Orchestra. They did a track with probably my favourite rapper. He's called Roots Maneuver. They did this incredible track called All Things to All Men.
And now it seems as if we're used to the shaggy. We made our beds and now we hate where these beds be. Took nothing at all to part this Red Sea. I'm a shackled child, singing the good song of freedom. They've got no pride, they interrupt our grieving. Teardrops dropping for the pain of the world. My best friend dies when she was just a young girl. Left me here to fend for myself. Now the pain never leaves, we just learn to cope. So when the devil...
That was the Cinematic Orchestra and All Things to All Men. I suppose one of the most important gigs you ever did, and interesting, it was one that was unpaid, was for the Lavender Trust, because that's a breast cancer charity, and there you were accompanying a certain very famous model on piano. Tell me about that.
It was at Claridge's, and the only person who I was really going to accompany was Sophie, and we'd never met before. And we immediately started chatting about books that we loved, and she was a proper bookworm. And we just got on really well straight away. I mean, I didn't entertain for one second she'd be interested in me. I assumed that everyone who met her would kind of fall in love with her, so I didn't really think that it would necessarily be my place. So I played it pretty cool. I thought she had balls to sing in front of these noisy people drinking tons of free drinks. I thought she was really... She had a lot of... I don't want to say balls again, because you can't say that about your wife, can you?
Nerve, a lot of nerve.
The word, yeah. But again, you know, she was living in New York, she had a boyfriend, and we just remained kind of casual friends, and then kind of, I think it was about 6 to 8 months later, she moved back to England, and obviously it became more after that.
As you say, you know, when you first met her, you thought, well, she couldn't possibly be interested in me, and it's not that you're an unattractive person, but she is one of the most famous models in the world. So how did you get over that initial... Is she interested?
I think it's because when you're, you know, that's one of the things that people misunderstand about her. I think there's a lot of people who have maybe been models in their career that you assume that they kind of carry this weight around with them, but she's nothing like that at all. She's unbelievably down to earth and kind of earthy, and we connected on an entirely different level away from that whole thing. And since I've known her, she hasn't really done any modelling, so she kind of stands around in the kitchen drinking cups of tea, like labouring over sentences. You know, that's the Sophie I know, and that's the one that I fell in love with.
OK, it's time now, Jamie, to hear your next piece of music. What are we going to hear?
It's interesting we've been, you know, talking about my wife, because this is a song that reminds me and tells me about the life I have now, which is with two girls, my daughter and my wife. You create this unit and you want to look after them and protect them, and you become this kind of clan, and it's an amazing feeling, and this song really kind of captures that. It's by a band I love anyway called Animal Collective, and it's called My Girls. Yeah.
That was Animal Collective and My Girl. So you're going to be 33 this year, Jamie. It seems a little early to be looking back on the highlights of your musical life. So let's just talk about the highlights so far. You've performed at the Proms, at the Royal Variety Performance. You've sold out at the Royal Albert Hall. I'm wondering, what have been your personal highlights, the moments that you've thought, ah, that's what it's about?
They're always the smaller moments. Receiving the CD through the post for the first time, or finishing a song just at home on the piano and then seeing it become something, seeing it take on a life of its own. Those, to me, are the moments that make it incredibly special.
Tell me about 2003 then, when 20-something came out. I mean, there was just an enormous reaction, an enormous critical reaction. You know, it was so much more, wasn't it, than Flavour of the Month. There was a real sense that this is somebody to watch. Did you feel that you were almost hit by a tidal wave of attention that year?
I did. It was immense and quite frightening, and I was completely unprepared for it. You know, you can just see by what I was wearing on so many things that I turned up in that I was just not prepared, you know.
Like what?
Terrible clothes and jeans that didn't fit, and, you know, I hadn't even brushed my hair like today. Physically, it was hard because I was travelling so much, but that was also exciting. But I was completely unprepared for it. And, you know, I definitely went through a stage where I wasn't myself. You find yourself at 3 o'clock in the morning surrounded by people you don't know, in a house you don't know, in a city you don't know, and you're not sure how you're going to get home, and it's like, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
I don't even like these people. You get carried along by this huge, the ego train, and it's very easy to kind of get lost in it. But the thing I always, always had to save me was the fact that my most enjoyable thing was getting in a room with my band and playing. And that's not romanticising it, that's just what I enjoy doing the most. That would always kind of drag me back to earth. It was always more fun than being in a room full of people I didn't know.
Time for some music, Jamie. We're near the end, 7th disc, what are we going to hear?
This artist is someone I look up to so much right now, and he's an incredible songwriter, a multi-instrumentalist, and he's as creative as any novelist. His name is Sufjan Stevens, and the title of this song is Concerning the UFO Sighting Near Highland, Illinois.
When the revenant came down, we couldn't imagine what it was. In the spirit of three stars, the alien thing that took its form.
That was Sufjan Stevens and Concerning the UFO Sighting Near Highland, Illinois. I'm going to cast you away, of course, to an island where there will be no radio show to present. There'll be no gigs to play. You'll be away from your beautiful wife and your little daughter. How on earth will you cope?
Aren't there another 2,073 castaways there already? That sounds like we could have a rave to me. But
after 70 years, you found the flaw in the format. No, you're all on your own.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. How are you going to cope?
I would find it very hard to cope now I've found my soulmate. You know, we exist as a pair now, definitely. But if I had to, I'm pretty good on my own. I'm actually quite a gifted layabout, I promise you. So I'd just sit under a tree and get a tan.
You'd survive. Okay, it's time now to hear your final disc, Jamie. What are we going to hear?
Well, am I going to play it for you?
You are.
Okay. Well, we talked about the Lavender Trust event I played, and this was the tune that Sophie sang and I played for her. Obviously a very important tune in my life now. It's a beautiful song called I Think It's Going to Rain Today. When I realised I was going to play it for this, I started trying to put it in my key. And I realised, even though it's really low for me, or really high in Sophie's key, it doesn't sound right in any other key now. It only sounds right played in this key. So I'm going to play I Think It's Going to Rain Today in the original key.
Scarecrows dressed in the latest styles, with frozen smiles to chase the love away. Human kindness is overflowing, and I think it's gonna rain today.
Jamie Cullum and I Think It's Going to Rain Today by Randy Newman. So we come to the point, Jamie, you know what happens? I give you the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare.
Good.
And yes, and you get to take another book. What other book would you like to take?
This is very hard. But I think I would take the book that helped me fall in love with reading, really, and a lot of ways helped me fall in love with jazz as well. It would have to be On the Road by Jack Kerouac.
Okay, we shall give you that. You're allowed a luxury too, of course. What's your luxury going
to
be?
It would be very simple, actually. I love to draw, so I would take a huge stack of lovely white paper and tons of pencils, and I would work on my, is it draftsmanship? Is that the word?
So you wouldn't take a piano?
Well, I thought about taking a piano, but I thought, you know, a piano is too boring a choice. You'd expect that too much. And, you know, I've done an awful lot of playing the piano in my life, and they probably want to rest from me anyway. So I would take a pencil and tons of paper.
It's yours. And if you had to save just one track from The Waves, which one would you save?
It would have to be the last one, I Think It's Gonna Rain Today, because that's obviously, without that song, I'm not sure I'd be where I am right now.
Okay, and we, of course, asked you to perform it for us, for our pleasure, but who's singing? Would you take your version? Would you take somebody else's
version? Oh, hell no, I'd take Nina Simone's version.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, it's yours. Jamie Cullum, thank you for joining me at the More Than Words Festival in Bristol, and thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.